Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome to ABQ Connect, presented by Bosque Home Services. Carlos and his team provide heating, cooling, plumbing, roofing, and restoration services. Call 444-7200. Bosque Home Services, locally grown, locally owned. I'm joined in studio today by James Widener. He is the director and the founder of Duke City Recovery Toolbox. They are an addiction recovery center for body, mind, and spirit. James, welcome. Yeah. Hey, get real close to that microphone. There you go.
Become my best buddy now.
There you go. Yeah, that microphone will love you by the end of this broadcast, right? Hey, I'm so glad you could be here. A Chappie who's on our campus, he is a retired pilot and military guy. He also does some work for you. He's on the campus of Calvary Church. He told me about your ministry and what you do and the hard work that you do and the many, many people that you're helping. So I'm excited to talk to you about the Duke City Recovery Toolbox. Tell us about your work and how this all came into being.
All right. Once again, my name is James Widener. I'm one of the founders of Duke City Recovery Toolbox. We opened back in October 2012. And the reason it came about, I was working in the building industries, working for my mother-in-law, building homes, helping build homes, and then the market crashed. And, you know, with my past history, I had, you know, obtained my substance abuse counseling license, and I found myself looking for a job, and I ended up in a job in Santa Fe at a methadone clinic. Mm-hmm. Knew nothing about it, just heard bad things, and everything I'd known about it, it was bad, right? And here I am, show up to this new job, knowing that I'm going to work, be employed in a methadone clinic, just knowing it's been bad from my experience. And so, you know, it's long drives up there. And my very first client I got was somebody that was just pushed aside, kept being pushed aside, and they looked at him as hard to engage, right? Hard engagement guy. And so we were able to, after working with him, we were able to get him stable on methadone, you know? And for those that don't know what methadone is a medication used to help with the withdrawals of opioids, either heroin, pain medication, and so it works really well with that. And so we were able to get this guy stable on the methadone, but he still had mental health issues, and he wouldn't go the referrals. I would send him referral after referral, and then finally when we sat down and talked, he didn't know what to do. And so we came up with a plan. I said, you're going to bring a sack lunch, and we're going to go over to LifeLink up in Santa Fe, and we'll get you services. So after sitting down and working with him and showing him how to do things, and I was just like, why am I getting so involved? And God's all, you got to learn these things. You got to learn everything. Listen to the people. Listen to who you're working with. And I'm sitting there, what's this all about? And then one day I was driving to work, and he says, you're going to open a clinic. I go, what? You're going to open methadone clinic, and you're going to do it different. And I said, how am I going to do this? And just driving. And from that day on, I kept on coming up with ideas, and things kept on popping in my head and started resonating with me. It's like, where's all this coming from? I didn't know where it was coming from, but it was just like, you know, God guiding me through the path. And, you know, I ended up getting transferred to a clinic down in Albuquerque, and he connected with more people. He connected me with skilled people. People that knew how to do a methadone clinic, run it, that's been actually in the forefront. And I go, how did these run? What does it cost? And I start asking questions. Next thing you know, people they're giving me documents of how things are run and how much it costs and set up. I said, oh, man. And so I'm working at a clinic in Albuquerque, and I come across this gentleman. And we hit it off really well. He's a strong believer. Doesn't live in Albuquerque, lives in Colorado. And I told him this idea I had. And I told him, I don't think we'll make very much money, but I think we'll save a lot of lives. And we could possibly bring people to Christ because, you know, we'll make it faith-based. He goes, okay, sounds good. Let's do it. So we didn't know what we're doing. He didn't have any idea. I had no idea. And God put these people in my lives, and I'm trying to convince them to leave jobs that they've been at for 5 years to come run with me with this crazy idea I had. I go, yeah, and then we're going to use mental health therapists. We won't have to do referrals anymore. We'll take care of everybody under one roof. And it's just like, you're crazy. They told me, no, I even got a name. I go, what are you going to call it? I said, I don't know. Duke City Recovery Toolbox. It just popped in my mouth. So I was like, okay, sounds good. Now we got a name. Let's find a place to do it. Driving down First Street, down, you know, we looked at the worst areas, the biggest corridors that had the highest rate of overdoses. And that's the corridor where we're located right now. That's that Lomas corridor. And we go there and we say, hey, this is what we want to do. We'll do a lease with them. And the people come back and said, well, we don't want to do a methadone clinic. We don't like it. You guys cause problems, destroy the neighborhoods, and all this other stuff. And I go, ma'am, can I talk to you? And so I talked to the actual people that own the property, and I explained to her. She goes, I never knew that. Let me go talk to my dad. She came back and said, yeah, here's your lease. They gave us a lease. They gave us 6 months for improvement to lease it for free. It was just a blessing. It was just like, how is this happening, right? So that's how we started. And that, you know, that's kind of like where we got our start.
Yeah. It's interesting to me that you were able to identify corridors in the city where addiction is most common, right, in these neighborhoods. How is that related to, is it related to poverty, or are people of every socioeconomic level affected by this?
You know, it doesn't, drug addiction doesn't care if you got 5 cents or $5 million, it doesn't cross. Up in Santa Fe, I had people on my caseload that were homeless, all the way to millionaires that had big corporations. It doesn't care. You know, we can go back and look at even the Bush daughters when they got in trouble, mm-hmm, when President Bush was in office. You know, mm-hmm, it doesn't matter who it is. And I remember, it's funny, the laws didn't start changing until we started recognizing more famous people's family and policymakers' families getting in trouble. That's when we started seeing more money get pushed for substance abuse. And I wrote that in my paper. I think that was back in like 97. I wrote an article about that when I was doing my studies. And it holds true to today.
Tell us the services that you provide, because you don't just treat people with drug addiction. You treat people with alcohol addiction, mental illness.
Yeah, mental health, substance abuse across all boards. So we treat all polysubstance, which means methamphetamine, cocaine, alcohol, opioids. Of course, that's what our main focus is right now, because it seems to be the biggest prevalence, the biggest problem right now in, you know, across the country. You know, and the funny thing we don't look at is, like, alcohol is still the number one problem in New Mexico. But we really don't look at it like that. And, you know, we need to put a little bit more emphasis on it. We also provide mental health services, psychiatric services. We treat hepatitis C. So we do a lot. Try to have a real integrated healthcare system.
Yeah, and you have professional medical professionals on site. You have professional counselors and others.
Yeah, we employ about 63 people, and it ranges from pharmacists to nurse practitioners, doctors, psychiatrists, mental health therapists, master level therapists, LPCCs. Then we have the social work side of that too. What we do is, what we're really fond of is the peer support that we have. Peer support has been a lifesaver. We've been using peer support workers for the last 5 years. And the cool thing about it is that a peer support worker is someone that has a lived experience, right? Who are we gonna gravitate more? The guy that's been there and done it, or the guy that's sitting over here reading out of a book? You know, it's just like, but we bridge those two together, the therapist and the peer, to make a real good recovery team for the individuals we're working with.
You know, from a spiritual perspective, that really blesses me. Because you're taking people that have admitted a weakness and said, I got to deal with this. They've dealt with it. And now they're coming out on the other side going, now God can use me to help other people.
Oh, it's so, it's just watching them grow as the peers grow and develop. And you see, hey, you can be a peer. Oh, I can't, I don't have anything. I got a background, you know, I got, you know, that's up to the employer to hire these people that have the more tricky, difficult backgrounds or more colorful backgrounds. You know, that's up to us to really take that risk with that individual.
What are some of the signs of addiction, James?
Changing attitude, behaviors, mannerisms, appearance, isolation. Those are the biggest ones.
Tell us a story about someone that you may have dealt with. I know you have to keep names and so forth confidential, but tell us a story about someone that has had an addiction and how that's affected their life.
Let me tell this story. We have we treat all type of people, so we even have women that are pregnant. We had this one woman come in. She was homeless, and she started doing our program, did well, and I think we were about like 3 weeks into the program, and she finds out she's pregnant, and she freaks out, doesn't know what to do, and all we can do is wrap our arms around her and support her in whatever decision she makes, and she made the right decision to keep the baby, in my words. And so we're watching and monitoring this lady the whole time through, and so she didn't have a job, she's pregnant, and now she's fully engaged in treatment. What do I do next? What do I do next? And she's still with us because she's just with us because she needs support. And that child is 3 years old now. Mm. She has her own place. She is a participant, participates in her daughter's life, employed, going to school. It's amazing. It's just like what we did. And I remember every time I see her walking in the back alley breezeway that we have, she goes, James, look at this. Look how, I go, look at your baby. It's so beautiful. She goes, this is all because of you. And I go, I can't take credit for that. Hmm. I can't take credit for that. That's not me. That's God doing all this stuff. You know, we're just here. We're just the vehicle for you to get to where you need to go. Hmm. Yeah, you know, that one's a really good story.
Yeah, that is a great story. Tell us how you're supported. I know you do get some state and federal funds, but do you also take donations and things if people want to support you?
No, we don't take donations. We're supported mostly through Medicaid funds.
Okay.
And then private insurance.
Yeah. How can our listeners support you? I mean,
prayer, you know, and if you have anybody that you know that's struggling with opioid addiction, have them reach out to us, you know. They can reach out to us on our website or our 505-224-9777 phone number.
Okay. Now, it's 224-9777?
Yes.
Yeah, I want to make sure I wrote it down right. And then your website is DukeCityRecovery.com.
Yeah.
And people can reach out to you there. What's the cost for somebody that might need to come in for treatment?
You know, it depends on what the service is. So for anyone that comes in, majority of all people, we can find funding for them. We're connected with the city. Just show up. We don't turn anybody away. I don't want to put the cost on it. Just show up. I'll figure it out.
Yeah. And I want to emphasize again, there's people of all socioeconomic levels listening to our show.
Right.
You made a statement that I wrote down. Addiction doesn't care if you have 5 cents or $5 million.
Correct.
By the way, that's going on our Facebook page for this interview. Because yeah. I don't think people sometimes even perceive if they're at a certain social status or whatever, that this is something that could affect them.
I think depends on where you're at. You might be able to hide it more because that's what we do as families. We're really good about hiding things that we don't want in the open. Uh-huh. And so maybe if you have a little bit more money, you get to hide them someplace in Montana until they get better or whatever the case may be. You know, those, you know, whatever demographics be around that.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, it really doesn't matter. You know, it's the same heroin you're putting in your arm if you're up in the Heights or in the South Valley.
Hmm.
You know, it doesn't matter.
What are things like, I've heard of this thing called black tar heroin. How is that different than regular heroin? I don't even know if that's the correct terminology.
Well, black tar is mostly derivative from, it's more raw form.
Hmm.
And then what most people see and think about heroin is like from Pulp Fiction, white powder.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what we see here in New Mexico.
No.
We see the black tar.
Okay.
And right now what we're dealing with now is the heavy presence of fentanyl, which is even worse than the heroin because it's, you know, 100 times stronger.
James, I'm told if you try those things, if you just experiment, it grabs you.
You could probably do it one time without it grabbing you. A couple times, it all depends, you know. Because,
but you're not recommending people try it.
Oh, heck no, I wouldn't recommend you try it. You know, it really depends because most drug addiction is the byproduct of some type of trauma, right?
Mm.
And we self-medicate so we feel better. And that's what we do. So about 98% of everyone we work with have some type of trauma.
And so that becomes part of your therapy.
That's
to help them address that.
That's why the integrated part of therapy being able to do behavioral health with the substance abuse is such a big deal.
So critical. James Widener is with us today on ABQ Connect. He's the director of the Duke City Recovery Toolbox, one of their founders. The Duke City Recovery Toolbox is an addiction recovery center for body, mind, and spirit. Their number is 224-9777. You can reach them on the web at DukeCityRecovery.com. James is going to be with us the whole hour. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Gonstead Physical Medicine specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of spinal ligament injury, pain in your back, neck, shoulders, arms, and legs, as well as numbness in your extremities. Dizziness and bladder or bowel issues can all be symptoms. 90% of doctors treating spinal ligament injuries don't know how to determine the severity and location of this condition. At Gonstead Physical Medicine, all of the providers are trained to do this. Schedule a consultation today at gonstead-nm.com or 505-884-8585.
Serving you and your family day and night. Call Bosky when you want it done right. For heating and cooling, plumbing and more. 24/7 we'll be at your door.
Locally grown, locally owned. Bosky Heating and Cooling. A portion goes back into the community. 444-7200.
The aftermath of 2020 has left so many of us wrestling with questions about the future and wondering, what's next? Here's Skip Heitzig.
That's a question, by the way, that people ask anytime there is a catastrophe, any kind of catastrophic event causes people to ask the question, what's next? If there's a car accident that happens, well, what's next? Am I going to be able to walk after this? If a disease strikes someone, what's next? Am I going to be cured? If somebody we love dies, we ask, what's next? Am I going to be able to go on?
We want to help you live with confidence, no matter what the future holds, by sending you a powerful collection of Easter weekend messages from Skip Heitzig on the hope of the resurrection.
Anything's possible. If the one who said he's going to die and rise again died and rose again, that means all of the promises Jesus ever made are possible and can come true. That's why it's called The Living Hope.
The Morning That Changed Everything with Skip Heitzig is a DVD collection of six life-changing Easter messages. And it's our thanks for your gift of $35 or more today to help connect more people to the living hope of Jesus Christ. To give online securely, visit connectwithskip.com/offer or call 800-922-1888.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Thank you, Steve, for the smooth transitions into the show and out of the show. We appreciate you very much. Be sure and call Indigo Mortgage for a quote when you are shopping for your next mortgage loan. The team at Indigo Mortgage will explain how you can reduce your fees while getting the best interest rate possible. Call 836-5700 or reach them on the web at indigomortgage.net. Indigo Mortgage, because nobody cares more about your mortgage loan. James Widener, Duke City Recovery Toolbox in studio with me, telling us some really fascinating stories. It's a faith-based addiction recovery center. They use methadone and other methods as part of their treatment options. James, I'm interested to know, you mentioned that there are some methadone clinics that have had negative perception in communities. Maybe they've done the wrong thing, and you talked about doing it right. Is one of those perceptions that you perpetuate people even being addicted to the treatment? If it sounds like what you do is you put people on the road to recovery, and then you actually, in some cases, put them to work in your peer counseling.
Yeah, that's accurate. I think, you know, I believe all clinics do well to some point, but, you know, when me and Kevin were putting this place together, he goes, James, you know what? If we go out of business because there's nobody else to help, then we did our job. You know, so it's not a money grab for us. It's about how we can give back to the community. You know, my past is very checkered. I've been through quite a bit and done some, you know, crazy things. And, you know, this is a way I get to give back to the community,
yeah,
which I ran rampant in for many years.
Well, I've appreciated your testimony about how you felt God led.
Right.
And at the same time, you are a person that after you've done the work that you're doing, you see people recover and you know God's using you. I see a man whose self-image is pretty much resting in what God has provided for you and how he's leading you.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. And you're passing that on to other people. Have you seen people in awful, awful situations get through addiction and back on the track of health and growth? I mean, you mentioned this woman who had a baby 3 years into it, and she seems to be doing really well.
Yeah. You know, we pride ourselves in titrating people off methadone, and we use the term titrate, and that means reducing the amount of methadone they take. You know, 25 to 30 people a year that we titrate off. That's something that we stand behind. We don't, you know, for our clinic, our average dose at our clinic is right around maybe 87 milligrams. And that is very low because the standard is like 120, 130, you know. And so we start people, you know, our processes, we keep playing with until we find something that works, and we find something that works better. We find new science that says better things. And so we make those adjustments. You know, it's really important because we have doctors that are actually really involved with the client care, and that helps us a lot too.
I'm thinking about several categories of people just in terms of vocation. First, I'll say there's a high school student and they're busy with school, maybe some sports after school, tied up till 4:30, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And then I'm thinking about that businesswoman who is going to work at 8 a.m., getting off at 5. Can people in those situations get treatment?
Yeah, you know, now since we opened, you know, that's funny you ask that question, because we, at the end of January, we opened our new extended hours. So, you know, for a long time, it seems like we compartmentalized substance abuse and behavioral health to a 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. type of box. And so what we're missing out on is that high functioning addict, is that person that still is consumed with alcohol, drug addiction, but they're maintaining employment, they have family. And so we heard this concern because we were asked to remove a couple barriers. What are some barriers to treatment? And to me, the biggest barriers to treatment is time and access, right? And so no problem. All we got to do is expand hours. And so with that, we actually, by bringing on two mental health therapists, we created over 4,000 new additional hours that weren't available in Bernalillo County by increasing this time. And we're finding that we're able to reach more people because of time constraints they have during the day. They can't make it in. You know, to get into a methadone treatment, you're showing up at 5 o'clock in the morning to come in. And for that, and then you've got to be to work by 9, and you've already used up all your time off at work, trying to get high, whatever the case may be. So it makes it very difficult. So now we open these new hours, and it's a breath of fresh air for a lot of people.
You bet. Actually, it sounds like it relieves some pressure that might lead them to drug abuse and substance abuse.
Yeah, at least they know now there's a place they can come.
Yeah. You equated trauma with addiction in our earlier segment. Tell us, how do people become addicted?
You know, it's hard to say. It's just, you know, constant use over and over again. You know, the rule of thumb is, you know, for most people, if you shoot heroin like 3 or 4 days in a row, you're going to be strung out. You're going to be done. You know, addiction has, there's a lot of ways people become addicted, but most of all, it's through self-medicating. They don't want to feel the pain that they've been through. They get a taste of freedom. They feel some freedom when they're high. They don't have to remember, you know, the sexual abuse, the physical abuse growing up, the neglect, all those things get to disappear. And so they like that state.
When people can confront those traumas, I mean, you mentioned abuse. I mean, that's got to be a difficult thing for somebody to tell you about. But once they do, that's part of the healing.
That's the healing, when they realize that they weren't, that they're actually the victim. And they don't have to own that past anymore. We get to talk about it, make amends, and move forward.
I want to share an experience that I had and have you tell me what you think about this. I think I'm a habit-forming person, just as a personality. Like, for example, I've had to, in my spiritual life, I read the chapter of Proverbs corresponding with the day of the month So I go through Proverbs every month. And if we only have 30 days, then I have to do two chapters, 30 and 31, on a single day. I read five chapters of Psalms every day. So at the end of the month, I've read all 150 Psalms. And I've developed these habits. But I also am a habit-forming guy with food. I've had four knee operations as a result of a long time being a basketball player. And the last two operations I had in the hospital, they gave me morphine. And I'm just going to tell you right now, and I hope people won't take this as a positive thing. This is not a positive thing. I liked it way too much, and it scared me. I liked the way it made me feel, and so I've just made a covenant in my life. I'm not going to use any more of that. You know, the opioids and the morphines and those kind of things. I am not going to treat pain in myself because I almost recognize that if I did, I'd be in trouble.
Right. We like that lull. We like that feeling of there's nothing there. It's just like that moment when you can just sit there and just kick back and there's nothing in the world bothers. Nothing matters at that point. And I think that's what people like, especially when they got a chaotic brain going and you got so much going on. You got kids here. You got soccer here. You got finances. You got everything. And you get that hit, right? And you're just like, yeah, that's what I want to feel. Nothing, right?
But I don't have any idea how people function. And you have some high-functioning people that are substance abusers.
Right.
And they're just trashing their bodies.
Yeah, they're putting their bodies through a lot of destruction.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny, people come into methadone. One of the big old things with methadone, or methadone, predominantly methadone, is like, oh, it rots your teeth. Oh, it impregnates your bones. No, well, you know, we probably didn't have the best hygiene, right? And so we probably didn't brush our teeth a lot. And so now you're getting clean, starting to recognize, oh, I need a pretty smile to go with it. And, oh, this methadone's ruined my teeth. No, it's not ruining your teeth. The fact that this is years that led up to this.
Yes.
You know, and that's, you know, one thing. And then the other thing, methadone is processed through your liver, so it doesn't impregnate your bones. Mm. You're getting old. Mm. You know, yeah. Just those are things that happen.
Is there one drug of choice? I mean, you mentioned heroin, and some of these are things like methamphetamine still pretty common? And
yeah, methamphetamine's a really big problem, especially in New Mexico, too. That still will be a long, ongoing battle we're going to have to face.
Yeah, and yet you still provide help for people that are involved in that type of drug.
Yes, sir. Yes.
No limitations. I want to make sure people know how to get in touch with you. Your phone number is 505-224-9777. The website is DukeCityRecovery.com. James Widener, he is one of the founders and the director of the Duke City Recovery Toolbox. What are the steps to recovery, James?
Nope.
I mean, is it the 12-step thing that we all hear about?
Basically, what you hear is... You know, that's how I got clean through Narcotics Anonymous. That's how I was able to get on track and do things. But it takes different people have different routes. And so, you know, I think the biggest thing your listeners, some people listening can do is just support that person in whatever direction they want to go, as long as they're trying to get there. So the first thing is to acknowledge you have a problem, you know, and not to have someone acknowledge it for you, because that's not going to work. You have to truly believe that you have a problem, and then you can move forward and ask for help. You know, that's the biggest thing, is ask for help.
Do people that acknowledge that they have a problem, are they fearful that they can't come out of it and be valuable again?
I think they're more fearful about judgment, being judged. You know, once an addict, always an addict. That's a lie, you know.
Yeah, that's coming from an enemy. That's not coming from God, right?
Yeah, definitely attacked by the enemy, yeah.
Yeah.
You're not going to make it. Why are you even trying? You know, and that's really important to us, is have, excuse me, more availability, because we want, like, the window of opportunities when someone, God's pulling your heartstring, hey, go to treatment. And then Satan shows up and say, oh, we can't get you in today.
Yeah.
You know, and so we want to kind of remove those barriers and have more open access to treatment.
James Widener's presented to us a pretty compelling argument for people to not worry about how to afford treatment. Just get treatment. If you have something going on in your life, it's better to confront it right now, get it taken care of. The phone number to Duke City Recovery Toolbox is 505-224-9777. They are an addiction recovery center for body, mind, and spirit. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. We have a half an hour left with James. We will be right back.
This is a Fresh Thought. Listen up to Levi Lusco.
It's like, man, God's done huge things, but especially when I'm talking to church planners or couples who are praying about planning a church, it's, hey, it starts small. It starts with little things. It starts with little faith. And almost every week, Jenny or I are in some interview or podcast, and it almost always comes up. How did this whole thing start? What were those early days like? And going back there in your mind, going back there in your heart, just inspires faith. And honestly, when I think back to the beginning of Fresh Life, and what all along the way has been the secret sauce, so to speak, it's been this power of an invitation. It's been the power of, hey, we invite people. Hey, come and see what God's done. Come and see what God's done. Love to have you come. Pulling through drive-thrus, meeting people, inviting friends, talking to family, saying, hey, would you log on? Hey, that's a great point to say, hey, click the share button right there on YouTube. Click the share button on Facebook.
For more Fresh Thoughts, go to LeviLusco.com.
Here's our host, Rob West, with a MoneyWise Minute.
Here's a thought experiment. Suppose someone gave you $10,000, free and clear, not even any taxes to be paid. How would you use the money? A market research firm put that situation in question to 1,000 respondents a few months ago and provided certain responses they had to choose from. About a third of the people said they'd either build up their savings or invest the money. About a fourth said they'd pay down debt. Well, the fact is that you're not likely to get a gift of $10,000. So consider this question instead. What are you doing with the money you have now? What are your financial priorities? And are those the correct priorities if you really want to save for the future and get out of debt?
I have to apologize. This is Roger Patterson with a Minute of Vision for Life. In the 2015 Miss Universe pageant, host Steve Harvey concluded the evening with a huge blunder. He mistakenly crowned Miss Colombia as Miss Universe when the honor actually went to Miss Philippines. The real awkward moment was when the crown was removed from Miss Colombia's head and placed on the eventual winner, Miss Philippines. As awkward and hurtful as that moment was, Harvey teaches us all that saying I'm sorry and please forgive me is so important. When I watched his response to his error, I thought, now here's a man who's had to apologize before. Here's a man comfortable with humility. Though a huge star, Steve Harvey didn't hesitate to take full responsibility for the error and to do so publicly. You know, you can tell a lot about a person who's willing to apologize in public. Proverbs 28:13 says, whoever conceals his transgressions will not prosper, but he who confesses and forsakes them will obtain mercy.
You've been listening to Dr. Roger Patterson with A Minute of Vision, a ministry of Vision for Life Radio.
Since the Bible is the Word of God, since it does reveal the character of God, since it alone describes salvation and eternal life, since all these things are true of God's Word, how important is it to know what every word of Scripture means? Hi, friends. John MacArthur here. There's only one way to tap into the power of Scripture, and that's by immersing yourself in it regularly. Every day on Grace to You, we unpack the Bible verse by verse, precept upon precept, and there's no better way to spend 30 minutes of your day. So join us here on this station for Grace to You.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on KNKT. On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Holly and Dave Slade and their team at Dave Slade and Associates Realtors are sponsors of the programming on KNKT and our show, ABQ Connect. Call Holly or Dave at 342-8100 when you first start thinking about selling your home or buying a new one. Holly and Dave Slade at Dave Slade and Associates, doing business by the book, 342-8100, or reach them on the web at abqhomeseeker.com. James Widener in studio. He is the director of the Duke City Recovery Toolbox. They are a methadone treatment facility. They help people of all types of addictions. It's a recovery center for body, mind, and spirit. Are you substituting one drug, methadone, for another, James?
You know, it's funny you say that. You know, that's what a lot of people think, that you're substituting one. So you got to look at it like this. So we're actually giving you pharmaceutical medication that's on a prescribed amount on a consistent basis. Okay, so if we go back and look, so when you start shooting dope, taking pain pills illicitly, and you're starting abusing them, your brain goes, wait, hold on a second. What is all this coming in? I'm supposed to be making that myself because your body creates its own dopamine, right? Mm-hmm. For pain. And so your brain's saying, whoop, time out. I'm not going to make anymore. I'm done. I'm not making any. So you keep putting foreign in your body. Your brain shut off. And then all of a sudden you run out of the foreign. And your brain goes, beep, boop, boop. Oh, no, we got a problem, Houston. We don't have enough dopamine in the body to support it. And then that's where we start to get the withdrawal feelings, right? Mm. And so what we're giving you when we give you methadone, say you come in and we get you stable, maybe you're on 30, 40 milligrams, we're giving you that same dose every day. So your brain knows, hey, cool, I don't have to worry about it. Same amount is coming in my body. I'm good. And then what we start to do, and then the titration part, how we're so successful titrating people off, is like we pull a little bit away each time. You know, after 7 days, a couple of milligrams, 2 milligrams, whatever the person feels most comfortable at, because we've got to get buy-in from the individual too. So now, instead of having your brain to go into super overload, trying to make its own and cause all the discomfort you're feeling with the withdrawal symptoms, the symptoms aren't as severe because it's only have to produce a little bit, right? And so we're able to slowly decrease people down. When you're out there shooting dope, you don't know the strength of it. You don't even know what's in it, right? And so that's why we're not substituting one for another. We're actually giving you a prescribed medication from a pharmacist, from a doctor, and a direct medical plan to go with it.
And subsequently also doing some counseling and...
Oh, yeah, the supportive service go along with it, go a long way with it.
Tell us how that plan works. What would maybe an example be of how often you would talk with a therapist or somebody?
So it's going to be individually based. So the minimum requirements is for anyone that's in a medication-assisted treatment program is once a month, which is absurd. Once a month for an hour is really not going to help anybody. That's why we kicked it up, and so we were requiring minimum one individual and then one group's counseling. But if we can get the individuals to be seen weekly, would benefit them more, and you know, benefit them better, and we'd actually get them out of treatment, I believe, a lot faster, because I think coupled with it, the outcomes are better. Even though there's research studies from overseas saying you can get one group and just give them methadone, and then you get that's another group, give them methadone and counseling, and you have the same outcomes. To me, I buy into the therapy component of it because we're dealing with the trauma. You know, it all goes back to trauma. And we got to give people an opportunity to express what's going on in their lives. You know, we got to listen. That's the most important part, listen.
A lot of people, you mentioned isolation as being a sign of substance abuse. Do you try to get people back involved with their families or with loved ones or with friends as part of that process?
Yeah, I was just having this conversation the other day with a couple of friends of mine. It's just like the hardest thing is when we get someone new in treatment and they're anticipating they want instant gratification. They want that relationship back. Mm-hmm. That relationship took years to damage. It's not going to happen overnight. And so that's one thing we have to support people with. No, it's not now. It's just, hey, they're just not ready. No. Now means, hey, they don't want you out of their life. They're just not ready right now. You got to show something. Show and prove them. And like I was telling people before, I said, now that you're clean, you got to change a lot of different things. Doesn't mean you get a wake up and you walk by the garbage can, it's full of trash, that you just leave it there and you don't take it outside. Your family and loved ones, they want to see a behavior change to go along with the drug addiction. Mm. So there has to be change across the board.
And you've seen that change in
people. Oh, yeah. We see it all the time.
Yeah. Is it easier for older people or younger people to kick addictions?
You know, I don't have – really never looked at data on that. You know, we base it off numbers, how well someone does. But what we have had over the last several years is a higher increase of older people coming in the clinic, because they were getting kicked off from – they've been going to their doctors for years and years and years and getting crazy amounts of pain medication, Now, recently, the DEA is really scrutinizing doctors, and so doctors are firing patients because of the pain medicine. I had this lady, 68 years, 70 years old, could have been our mom's, and she was out finding herself out buying her heroin out, you know, in the East Park town, East Central over there, and just couldn't believe it. And you go, how did you end up here? She goes, well, the doctor took me off my pain medicine, and I'm sick.
Yeah. You told me something interesting that I didn't know during the break. I had asked you what Narcan is, and I didn't realize that drug is actually used to help when, say, a police officer finds somebody that's overdosed or something. They inject them with Narcan, and in some cases that can save their life.
Yeah, it's not a, some, the police carry an injectable, but what you'll see around most now is just a nasal. Mm. It's a nasal spray, and it works really well for opioid deaths. I believe last year there was probably over 350 reversals because of Narcan. Yeah, we make it a point that every one of our clients that come into treatment before they get their first medication, either Suboxone or methadone, that they get their, they have a prescription and actual Narcan in their hands. You know, it's all about safety.
If you're hiding an addiction, and let's say you're a plumber or an electrician, are there issues of that substance abuse that are endangering you and people that you're working for?
Yeah, you know, it just depends on, yeah, I'm just going to say yes. You know, when you're consumed with drug addiction, it's just like you really don't pay attention to your work because you're usually looking for that next high, trying to figure out where you're going to get money to get high, how you're going to sneak away from work. And so I think attention to detail is going to be really less.
Yeah. What's a typical treatment program length? Does it take a year or does it take 2 months?
I've had people come in and out in 18 months. Mm. You know, it takes a while because remember, we're dealing with your wire, rewiring the brain, connectivity of the brain. The biggest, you know, the most difficult part for people to overcome is the withdrawal feelings. They don't want to be sick. Mm-hmm. You just don't want to be sick. So opioid withdrawal is really bad. Benzodiazepine withdrawal is severely bad. Alcoholism is really bad too.
Yeah.
They're very, all three of those are the top worst withdrawals.
I have some friends that I grew up with and social drinkers, they would consider themselves. But alcoholism snuck up on a couple people, just almost silently. Is that common in your experience?
Yeah, I think that can happen to anybody. You know, it's just, you just need to, yeah, just be careful. You know, drinking, period. You just have to be careful around, you know, people consume way too many, and they get out and drive all the time. And it's the ones that get caught is what the numbers we're looking at. But if you look at the real numbers, how many people out there actually drinking while driving, that number would be astronomical.
That's a good question. Do you have people that are mandated to go to your clinic because they've been arrested or something like that? And are you actually able to help them?
We don't have any clients right now that are mandated, but we've supported a lot of people with getting treatment to help get their kids back to CYFD, drug court, and different agencies within the judicial system.
Yeah, I guess I always ask the question, how far does somebody have to fall before they really realize, I got to change this? And the most amazing thing is to me, and I've seen this so many times, with any kind of weakness, or I'll call any kind of sin in anybody's life, when you make it evident and you confess it, God always turns it around so that that weakness is his strength in your life. And you can be used so wonderfully in so many ways. And you already testified to that happening in your clinic already with some of the peer counseling and things that you have with people that have gone through these treatments.
Oh, even for myself, you know, I've been shot and kidnapped. I've been kidnapped twice and shot. So I've lived a very checkered life. So, you know, and I go back and, would I change anything? I said, no, I had to go through what I went through to be able to help the people that I'm working with today. Otherwise, I would not know who they are, how to address them, how to even communicate with them to you know, show them hope. Yeah. You know, I'm that glimmer of hope sometimes for somebody.
You mentioned in your first job that a person you were working with had kind of been discarded because they were difficult.
Yeah.
But your heart is to work with those kind of people.
It wasn't like, I didn't know what, I'm just showing up and this is what I was directed to do. I had no idea.
Yeah.
You know, all I knew is that there was a way.
Yeah.
Right? It wasn't my way. It was God's way. It's, you know, we just keep helping.
Yes. James Widener, he is the director of Duke City Recovery Toolbox. They're located, tell us your address. I don't have that address.
We're at 912 First Street.
91, okay. And their phone number is 224-9777. Website is DukeCityRecovery.com. One more segment with James. We'll be right back.
Here's our host, Rob West, with a MoneyWise Minute.
Here's a thought experiment. Suppose someone gave you $10,000, free and clear, not even any taxes to be paid. How would you use the money? A market research firm put that situation in question to 1,000 respondents a few months ago and provided certain responses they had to choose from. About a third of the people said they'd either build up their savings or invest the money. About a fourth said they'd pay down debt. Well, the fact is that you're not likely to get a gift of $10,000. So consider this question instead. What are you doing with the money you have now? What are your financial priorities? And are those the correct priorities if you really want to save for the future and get out of debt?
Hi, I'm Todd Nettleton, and this is the Voice of the Martyrs Radio. Authorities in a Laotian village threatened a local pastor at gunpoint after he made plans to enlarge his home to accommodate more than 130 people who had gathered for Sunday worship. Officials insisted that members of the congregation renounce their faith, and the pastor signed a document agreeing to close his house church. But all refused, announcing they would never deny Jesus Christ. Bravely standing on faith, the pastor told authorities he was willing to go to jail. A VOM contact reported this pastor and his church members have only been Christians for 1 year, yet they are facing tremendous persecution. Please pray for them.
I will not let my brothers and sisters suffer in silence.
Nor will I let them serve alone.
To join me in prayer for persecuted Christians,
go to vomradio.net.
Whether at home or in the workplace, we're all leaders. Become a better leader in this leadership moment with Craig Groeschel.
How do you lead up effectively? Honor matters. Showing honor matters. If you don't feel a sense of honor for the person who is above you, they're going to sense it through you. If you're looking around going, I could do better than that, you know, I should be in that role. What you need to understand is that if you were supposed to be in that role, you would be in that role. You're not in that role because you're not yet supposed to be in that role. If you want one day to be over others, you need to learn to be under others and show honor. Show honor where you are. Now, you may say, well, you know, but my leader is not amazing. You're mixing respect and honor. When you remember that respect is earned, honor is given. Honor those in authority over us. We believe that they are there because they're supposed to be there, and we're going to serve them and help their mission be better.
That was Craig Groeschel on a KNKT Leadership Moment. Hear more at life.church/leadership podcast.
Listening to KNKT, Quebec, to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
A water crisis has been building in Asia for decades. This is due primarily to the population being so massive, over 1.3 billion people. It has outgrown their water supply. Sadly, this has caused a range of waterborne health problems for millions, while also severely impacting local agriculture as farmers don't have the water to grow their crops. The COVID crisis only made the situation more dire as it swept through the crowded cities with deadly efficiency. Clean water is more precious than gold for those who don't have it, and the people of Asia know this. The good news is that the solutions to all of these problems are available through the month of March. You can give a gift of a Jesus well with KNKT or Star 88 and GFA World. These wells cost an average of $1,400 and can provide clean water to an entire village of 300 people. You can make a gift of any amount to contribute to one of these wells. Visit knkt.com or star88.fm and click the Gospel for Asia banner. That way you can make a gift. 877-884-2276 is their phone number. Now more than ever, the people of Asia need good, clean water. James Widener in studio with me. He's the director of the Duke City Recovery Toolbox. They are an addiction recovery center for body, mind, and spirit. interesting story about how you got into this, James, and I want to ask you now about a population, our United States veterans, people coming out of battlefields and stuff. Many have experienced a lot of trauma, may not have a lot of family support. I imagine that isolation gets to be overwhelming. Are you able to help veterans when they're facing these kinds of issues?
Yeah, we're, I know we're the only clinic in Albuquerque and in New Mexico that offers services to veterans. And so we do have funding through TRICOR and TRICARE West for them. Remember when the first individuals I got to work with when I came to at work in Albuquerque was a gentleman, and he was at the clinic I was at. He was been there for like 4 years, and he was a Vietnam vet, and he was very difficult to engage and it was real quiet. And then I started bringing up stories about my dad being a Vietnam vet, you know, and that sort of opened doors for our relationship a little bit more. And he was able to really identify coming back with some of the stories I was telling about my dad, what my dad felt when he was coming back to the United States. And this gentleman was able to identify and open up and tell me the feelings that he had, shared the same feelings, and distrust from his community. And because he wasn't the lies that were being told about him, like, it really hurt him to see the things going on. But, you know, back then he said, we just did what we did. And so he was able to vent with me. And so we were able to bond over my dad's experience and the experience I gained from my dad. And this guy was been in treatment, and he was having to come every day for years. And through our relationship and, you know, our prayer and working together, he was able to overcome that and now started giving us clean drug tests. Now he has take homes. And when I left that clinic, he was getting medication for 3 weeks at a time or 2 weeks at a time. So he was on a step 14, which was phenomenal because he's never been there before. And I heard it wasn't soon after I left there, he titrated all the way off. So he did well.
That's really exciting.
Yeah.
Do you train families how to help loved ones stay clean once they're clean?
You know, I have conversations quite often with people, and, you know, the most important thing and the most difficult thing and the most challenging thing is setting boundaries and keeping them, right? And that goes back, that, you know, it's so important. I keep saying that that's the biggest sign of love, is that no. And that was brought to my attention when I used to have halfway houses. And so the sponsor I had in NA, Narcotics Anonymous, we were doing some step work. And he goes, hey, tell me about, what do you do with the guys that are on probation when they come back, or they're on drugs or they're high, or they don't show up and they're not doing what they're supposed to do? He goes, what do you do? I said, you know, I call a probation office. You know, that's what I'm supposed to do. He goes, okay. What do you do when your kids don't do what they're supposed to do? And so I hear what you're saying. That like stuck so hard in my heart. It's just like, I'm failing my kids because I don't set boundaries. But as a parent, it's so hard. And so I go back to reiterate to people that, you know, the best thing you can do is set a boundary. You know, well, he keeps coming and getting money, and I give him money, so stop giving him money. I need to know he's safe. I said, you know, that's where you got to turn over to God and just give him to God. Say, hey, God, I've taken this kid as far as I can go. He's yours now. You know, and that's the advice I give people. But they keep coming back, and that's the number one thing, is set those boundaries. Because a lot of addicts for the longest time, they scratch and throw tantrums really loud to the point where you just give in and say, okay, here. Or, oh, I'm going to give you some money. You're going to go get your drugs. You're going to come home and do them in the home. You know, I just want to know you're safe. You know, we got to just draw those lines, say, no, enough's enough.
Yes. Well, I noticed as part of your staff, you have some security people on your staff.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's necessary.
No, I don't think we've had any, maybe we've been open like 9 years, 8 years. And I think we've had maybe one incident where we had to use security. Security is mostly there to guide and support. There's just an extra set of eyes out there.
Good.
You know, we don't do hands-on. We don't do any of that stuff.
What it sounds like to me is the people that are there with the Duke City Recovery Toolbox are people that want help. They want to change. They want to get off of the substance that they are addicted to?
Majority of them are tired of being tired and sick, sick and tired. They're just tired of being sick and tired.
Wow.
You know, that's the main thing. And, you know, we have some people there that are just there to please their family. The ones that get it and do well are the ones that are there for themselves.
What separates your care for people with addictions from, I guess, what I would categorize as a typical methadone clinic? What separates your organization?
Well, you know, we're a behavioral health clinic that provide methadone services. So we're more of a holistic approach, treat the whole person. So, you know, strong emphasis on behavioral health, psychiatric, and that's what makes us different. You know, we have our faith-based track too. Mm-hmm. And that was going on the limb because we do get federal money. And so we had to be really clear in our mission and value statement that we do not prophesize. You know, we're not here to convert you to Christianity or anything. You know, if you come in and you need to go to a mosque, we're going to find you the best one we can send you to. If you need whatever services or spirituality direction you need, we're going to give it to you. We just know that people that sign up for the faith-based track, we can go to prayer with. They can come to Bible study. We give them recovery Bibles, those kind of things. It's no different than the people services that are not on the faith-based track, just the fact that we don't do the prayer with them. Mm. We don't offer those services to them because we know that's not their jam.
Yeah. Well, but it sounds like you do have an opportunity to talk to people about their faith. You have the availability to talk with them, everybody, about what's affecting them. They come to you with the weakness in their life. They have to talk to you about those kind of things. And once they confront that, then God helps you to heal them. I associate back to what the first thing you said was in our first segment about how you heard God saying you would open up a clinic.
Right. Boy, that guy's got a that guy's got a sense of humor, I'm telling you.
Yeah, but it sounds like it's been going very well. Are you still in the same location where you started?
Yeah, same location.
Yeah, and so your landlord likes you?
Yeah, actually we're blessed and we bought all the property.
That's fantastic.
Where we're located.
Yeah, what a blessing. What a blessing. How can you encourage people that may be faced with this situation? Is it as simple as just picking up the phone and giving you a call?
Yeah, pick up the phone, give us a call. Let us connect you. You know, when you call in, tell them you need to speak to a peer. You know, because if you hear it coming from a peer, that person has been in your shoes. They've been homeless. They've been, you know, had the great job. They've done so many different things. And our peers, we have a very diverse group of peers. We have a peer that is strictly behavioral health, doesn't have substance abuse problems. Maybe you have mental health issues. You could talk to that peer. Maybe you're more of a white collar guy. We got a peer that he had a very well-to-do position at the state, and he retired and gratefully took this position with us, and we're just blessed to have him because he's more of that white collar guy attitude, very smart, speaks well. And so we can reach that population too. And then we got all, you know, the ones that, you know, common struggles. And so I think we have a really diverse group of individuals that can meet anyone's needs.
You think the public has a real perception of how pervasive this problem is?
They know it's there. They don't know what to do with it. They're tired of throwing money at it. It's not going away. You know, in the past, I've had the attorney generals and people come up to me and, you know, and meet with them and they go, hey, we've tried incarcerating our way out of this. We tried treatment. What do? How do we fix it? It's not just like, it's a big elephant and the only way we're going to fix it is one bite at a time, you know?
Yeah.
Listen to what they need and quit assuming that we know what they need.
James Widener, what a pleasure to meet you and to talk to you today on ABQ Connect. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
ABQ Connect is pre-
presented by Bosky Heating and Cooling. For service, call 504-444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling. Locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.